October 12, 1992. North Atlantic Ocean. Approximately 60 miles offshore. Equidistant from the New Jersey and New York coastlines. The wind mounted steadily throughout the night as Chris Rouse, cocooned in his sleeping bag, braced himself against the side of his bunk. He felt a bit uneasy, his stomach tossed by the dark waves that slammed against the 60-foot length of the dive charter boat Seeker. He was not that far from the New Jersey coast, but he might as well have been in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Chris peered out from between his sleeping bag and the bunk. In the dawn's soot-gray light, all he could see through the boat's windows was a blanket of sky and dark blue waves with white spray blowing off their crests. Somewhere in the distance lay the horizon, but he couldn't tell where. The sea and sky were seamless. He judged the waves to be 5 feet high, with occasional rollers over 8 feet. Not a good day to continue the exploration of the most technically challenging dive site he had faced in more than 700 logged dives. Only yesterday, the 39-year-old Rouse and his 22-year-old son, Chrissy, had conducted 2 dives to the unidentified submarine 230 feet below them. The wreck lay in 3 pieces, like a cigar with its middle torn out and angled between the ends. The middle section included the conning tower, the large tubular structure perpendicular to the vessel's body. The tower, though still intact, had been torn from its mount and thrown aside by whatever unknown force had sunk this submarine, probably back in the Second World War. Underneath the conning tower was the control room, the submarine's brain. Nothing was left of this nerve center but a jumble of jagged, sharp-edged steel plates and debris, the result of some violent explosion. Yesterday, Chrissy Rouse had crawled under and between the steel plates, wriggling his way inside while his father hovered outside the wreck. Somewhere in those razor-edged ruins lay something that would identify this sub, and father and son were determined to find it. Maybe the captain's logbook. It had to be nestled amid the wreckage just inside the opening. Chrissy hadn't found it yesterday, but the Rouses knew they were close. All that stood in their way was time, effort, and 8-foot waves. The Seeker bobbed and tugged at its anchor line, like a trapped animal seeking to break its tether. It had fought the ocean incessantly throughout the night, and its wooden beams and planking let out creaks of protest at the restraint. The passengers and off-duty crew had tried to sleep in their bunks while wedged in such a way as to prevent being thrown to the heaving deck. John Chatterton, a commercial diver, sport diving instructor, highly respected wreck diver, and one of the Seeker's 2 captains, required by Coast Guard regulations during an overnight boat charter, burst into the main cabin and threw the light switch. "It's 6 o'clock," he announced. "If any of you want to do 2 dives today, you need to hit the water early. Weather reports calling for steadily increasing seas. And you can see," he nodded toward the window, "it's snotty already. If you want to dive, get in the water fast. We'd like to pull the hook and get out of here soon, before we really get slammed. I'm going to blow off my personal dive, and I'll just go down to pull the hook." The blonde Chatterton looked as if he'd fit in more readily on a college campus than on a dive boat, with his wire-rimmed glasses and boyish face. Unlike many hard-bitten sea captains, Chatterton had a receptive mind. He was happy to discuss diving techniques and gear configuration with his customers, even as he remained soft-spoken when talking about his own expertise and accomplishments.